Wow, so in this summer of 2015, I don't get to go to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, unfortunately, sadly. But I'm getting to do something kind of similar. I got to drive up to Ashland, Oregon to see, for the first time in 38 years, the renowned Oregon Shakespeare Festival in Ashland. I'm seeing three shows in 2 days, and I'm thrilled. One of the biggest reasons that I'm thrilled is my old friend Cynthia Ryder is now the executive director of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival and currently running it into the ground. Is that correct?
No, that is absolutely incorrect.
Good. I'm very glad to hear that.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or tablet or phone. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 450, Oregon Shakespeare Festival. The Oregon Shakespeare Festival in Ashland, Oregon celebrates its 80th anniversary this season, and my old friend Cynthia Ryder is its new-ish executive director. Cynthia took time out from her incredibly hectic summer schedule to talk to me about both the history and the future of OSF and how her own career and experience brought her to this amazing community and institution.
Cynthia is one of the finest actors I've A, ever worked with, B, directed, C, seen on stage, and she's one of the most talented, smartest actors I've ever seen. She is so smart, she got out of acting and went into administration. How did you, give me the reduced version of how you went from being an actor to a fundraiser administrator and now executive director. What was that journey like?
Well, it sort of just happened. I think you can look back at your life and make it a narrative of this grand plan. Yeah. There was no grand plan. I was just very fortunate, and I made some very good decisions at certain points, one of just which was that in between working as an actor, I was really tired of being bored and doing dumb jobs that I didn't like, and I wanted to do jobs that I cared about every day. Mm-hmm. And so I started getting different kinds of jobs, and, you know, unfortunately, there's not a lot of work for women in the theater, particularly women in their late 20s and early 30s. Right. And so you just follow the path that takes you somewhere. And I found much more rewarding and fulfilling work on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how it happened.
And you started as what, a fundraiser working in the box office? How did that?
You know what? My first real corporate experience, believe it or not, is I got a day job in New York. So I was still acting and auditioning, and I knew that I did not want to work in restaurants like yeah. a lot of my friends, because a lot of them yeah. work in restaurants because the work is more flexible. Yeah. You think it's more flexible. I actually got an office job where I had vacation time and sick time, and I could leave during the day, but then I'd just work late. Mm-hmm. And if I got a job, like to come up and work with you in the summer mm-hmm. when we both worked at American Stage Festival. Mm-hmm. I got another actor to do my job during the time that I was gone in yeah. the summer, and they let me do that.
Perfect. Dream job.
Dream job yeah. in that way. And what I also was learning at the time that I didn't realize is I was doing things like cash disbursements and accounting mm-hmm. and working internationally with people who had been recruited from other places and the first corporate donations program. Yeah. So I didn't really know it, but I was getting used to some of that kind of work. And then I did the same thing when I moved to Minneapolis, not knowing that's what I would do. I got a temp job working for a company, and I was completely not in the performing arts, but I ended up doing big federal grants, state grants, in partnership with lots of different entities, government entities, private entities, a board of directors that was a governor-appointed board. Right. So all that kind of experience kept kind of rolling up into, wait, why am I not combining my love of the arts with arts management, right. with management, uh-huh. nonprofit management in yeah. particular? And then I was lucky enough to get a job as the executive director of the Kansas City Friends of Alvin Ailey. Mm. So that was really the first time where I could really say I had a leadership management role in the arts.
Right. And that then took you to Kansas City Rep, which then brought you here to Ashland, where you're the, do I have this right, the third executive director in the 80-year history of this theater?
That's right. I am standing on the shoulders of Paul Nicholson, who was here for 33 years, wow. and Bill Patton before that.
Wow. Bill Patton, who I just saw a picture, was also an actor.
Yes.
Here.
Yes, yes.
Right. Does everybody pull double duty, double, triple, fourple duty now, or do you have a staff?
Other duties as assigned.
Yeah. You've written a contract or two in your time. Well, one of the reasons I was saying that I'm thrilled to be here, even though I can't be at the Edinburgh Fringe this summer, is that this is, I mean, the town of Ashland, Oregon, is all about the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. And so this, the theater plant, you know, campus is the center of not only the town geographically and spiritually, but sort of economically,
yes.
Right?
Yes, for sure.
So that it just seems great to have an entire town devoted to the operations of a theater.
Yeah.
How difficult is that navigating or managing such a ginormous institution?
Well, the thing I love about the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, one of the many things that I love, is that we are very much a part of this place. Mm. Like when you think of theaters or performing arts institutions or other cultural institutions, there are only, I can think of a few other ones where it's so much about where you are.
Yeah.
And there is something about going away and being in the woods, mm-hmm. and seeing these great plays, yeah. that were very hand in glove. I don't think the Oregon Shakespeare Festival would exist without Ashland and Southern Oregon and the Rogue Valley, and
sure.
and in the way that we do, our success is very much dependent on the fact that you can also take a walk into the woods, and you can go river rafting, and you can visit wineries,
yeah.
or not. You can come here and you can fully immerse yourself,
yeah.
in plays and just do plays all day and all night. So that destination theater is a different experience, and I think it's part of the reason that the audiences here are amazing. They are so in your corner.
Yeah.
They know the history of the place. Many of them have been here time and time again, or the new people that,
yeah.
come or return, like you,
yeah.
said you came here as a kid,
yeah.
and then 38 years later you come back. That is not an unusual story here.
And is your audience from all over the world? From,
yes,
all over the country?
Definitely all over the world. The majority of them from the West Coast, kind of Bay Area to, mm-hmm. Seattle, but people from all over the world.
And is one of the reasons that OSF is unique is because of this destination aspect? You don't just stumble across it when you're doing something else. You have to come here. You have to make an effort to come here.
Right. I think some people stumble across it. We call it sort of the I-5. They're on I-5 and they take a stop in,
uh-huh.
Ashland, and they suddenly discover there's a theater here. Oh,
right.
Wow, let's go see Count of Monte Cristo.
Right.
So there is some of that, but,
yeah.
mostly it's that it's a destination theater. And the other really unique thing is that we are a true rotating rep company. You can see the same actor in three different shows. You're here for 2 days. You have probably 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 shows that,
mm-hmm.
you could have chosen between to see.
That's right.
Because we're at three different theaters with different shows rotating in and out of them every matinee, every evening, a different show.
Are any other theaters doing that in this country, the rotating rep?
I think there are. Creed Repertory Theater in Colorado. You can think of other ones,
okay.
that still do rotating rep. But it's much rarer than it used to be because as a business model, it's very expensive.
Yeah.
But for a destination theater,
yeah.
it's actually intrinsic to who we are.
Yeah.
If you're here for 3 days, we don't only want to have one show for,
right.
you to see,
right.
because then you'll only buy one ticket.
Right.
But if we've got 9 shows that you could see, you'll come see more theater. You'll stay longer. You might even come back in the fall,
right.
because there's going to be 2 plays that aren't even open yet, so you don't have a chance to see them.
And so how does that work? You said it's a combination, a weird mix of regional theater and summer stock, right? Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
And is that so is there a peak time in the summer where you have the majority of your shows in rep, and then what's it like early year, still late winter, where you only have a couple?
Yeah, all three theaters are up and running. So our peak is when the outdoor Elizabethan that we're sitting in right now,
mm-hmm.
is open. So it opens in early June and runs through the middle of October.
Right.
So when we have all three shows running, and this is peak season in that every show is in performance or in rehearsal.
Right.
So we've got 9 shows open. We've got 2 more yet to open,
yes,
but they're in rehearsal.
Right.
When you're here in February, at the very beginning of the season, we still have four shows. We open four shows at the same time.
Wow.
So there's never a time that you could come here and not have multiple things to see.
Yeah.
You might just not have all nine. You, if you're here a little earlier, maybe there's six.
Yeah.
Or like I said, February, right. Four.
Right. And do you get the same sort of crowds in February, March as you do in the summer? Or summertime, you really get the tourists?
Yeah, summertime we get more of the tourist. The biggest difference, I would say, is that in the spring we have so many students because it's a big travel time for student groups. And the joy of looking outside and seeing like a group of 200 high school kids that are getting ready to go into Pericles or getting ready to go into Guys and Dolls. Yeah. There's a different dynamic when you kind of have that kind of age diversity. Our oldest audience and our youngest audience are our matinees. So you're at a 1:30 show of Streetcar Named Desire, and you've got 200 young people, and some of the oldest audience members are there, and it's absolutely, for me, the best shows that we have.
Hi, everybody. I'm Stan Lai, the artistic director of the Uzun Theater Festival in China, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSC the RSC? Sadly, this summer, nowhere is where you could see the RSC. We have no more gigs until this fall of 2015, when we'll be performing in Pennsylvania, Georgia, Virginia, California, Louisiana, North Carolina, Missouri, and Kansas. And then, next April and May of 2016, we'll perform the official world premiere of the RSC's 10th stage production, William Shakespeare's long-lost first play, Abridged, at the Folger Shakespeare Theater in Washington, D.C. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office venue and ticket information.
Do you get audience members saying, hey, you're not doing enough Shakespeare, you're the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, you're not doing enough Shakespeare? Or is that always a challenge for you guys to find the mix?
Yes, it's always a challenge to find the mix. Because we want to do everything, and we do everything. We do brand new plays, we do Shakespeare, we do classics, we do...
You're doing a musical with music by the Go-Go's.
Exactly. So, and yes, we get letters both that say, you're not doing enough Shakespeare, what happened to the Shakespeare, and why are you doing so much Shakespeare, I hate Shakespeare. So, why are you doing musicals, I hate musicals, please do more musicals.
Right.
So, finding the right balance in a season so that... that people see what they want to see, but also maybe take a chance. Like, I always feel like the show in the season that was the one that I was kind of like, well, yeah, I'm sure that'll be good. I don't know. Inevitably, that's the one I turn at, that I love the most.
Right.
So it's one of the great things about being at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. You're here, you might go see something because you're seeing three plays that if you were in Chicago, would you really get up and out and buy a ticket for that one?
Right.
Here, I think we do press people, we entice them to maybe go see something that they're not so sure, and then that ends up being their favorite thing. So I'm not alone in that, and that's one of the great joys of this season. I think one of the great surprises for people is Pericles, because it's not done very often. It has a reputation of being kind of a hard Shakespeare, and people love it.
Yeah.
They love it. And that delight.
It feels like a discovery to them of a new Shakespeare play.
Yes, this is where Shakespeare is brand new.
Yeah.
I'm always like, you think it's the classic? Well, if you've never seen Pericles, it's a brand new play for you.
Yeah.
So I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess if you're pissing off a right number of customers, you're probably doing the good job.
That's right. Yes, we try to think of it that way. Although we do take very seriously, of course, the people who have complaints, and you have to look at that and go, are we not doing enough? Are we doing too much? And we ask ourselves those questions all the time.
Well, and these are we were talking earlier. These are great conversations to have about issues of what is the right balance? What are the ramifications of multiracial casting? You know, or cross gender casting? You know, that is an ongoing conversation. These are conversations that are great to have. As executive director, the business side of things, do you get to participate in those artistic conversations?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the great things about this theater and why I love working here is that I feel like we really, if you have a real commitment to diversity, inclusion, and equity. equity. Mm-hmm. You want lots of voices around the table on all kinds of different issues. So whether that's place selection or how things are done or how you're handling your finances or who you're hiring or all those things, I feel like I get to weigh in, and I'm also very conscious. I'm sure I'm not always doing it as well as I should, as being sure that we get the all many, many different voices in my ear, in the artistic staffs, so that, because inevitably you make better decisions that way. Scientifically, it's been proven,
sure.
Right? The studies that show at a certain size group, you actually do make better decisions than you do on your own.
Yeah.
What's that
number?
What is that number? I can't remember. Where, if you have too few or too many, but there is a sweet spot there. We're always looking for that.
Well, and I love what you say is that, you know, you come to a play with not a great expectation, or people come to see Pericles going, oh, I don't ever even heard of this one, you know. That's been the Reduced Shakespeare Company motto, reducing expectations since 1981. Managing expectations is really part of the artistic process.
It is, and it is actually a very effective strategy.
So this is the 80th anniversary of OSF. Do you have, are there special events going on? Are you peaking this year and you're going, screw it, the 81st anniversary season will take care of itself?
No, I think we're trying to just celebrate all year the fact that we've been around for 80 years. And then next year is the big 400th anniversary celebration of Shakespeare's life.
Absolutely.
So we're also very much looking at the future and saying, okay, I feel, and I know almost everyone here feels very much, that we are stewards of this great institution and this incredible audience. So the decisions we're making now, how do we ensure the next 80 years are as exciting and full of the joy of coming to the theater?
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your anniversary celebrations via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also contact us on Facebook or Twitter, and we'll respond. Social media should be a dialogue, not a monologue. Some of you actually posted reviews of this podcast on iTunes. Thank you very much for those. If you haven't done it yet, it's not too late, and every review helps. Just click on over to iTunes or Facebook or Twitter now. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks as always to webmaster Matt Rippey, Pig in a Poke Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Kevin Hammond. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Stan Lai, artistic director of the Ujin Festival in China and the author of Secret Love in Peach Blossom Land, which is currently having its American premiere at the Oregon Shakespeare Festival, and which I was fortunate enough to be able to see. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Tischner, 1350ths of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
So how many times has OSF shot the canon, done the entire canon?
We will have completed the canon 4 times next year when we do Timon of Athens, and then we're going to do our 5th round of the canon. We've committed to doing the canon in a decade, which will be the shortest amount of time in which we have completed another complete round of the canon.
Wow.
So that starts this year with the Shakespeare productions that we have going on this year.
And did you know that they have discovered a long-lost first play of William Shakespeare's?
I actually saw it last week. It is incredible and very funny. And did you know that the theme from Gilligan's Island actually started in Shakespeare's long-lost first play? I learned so much.
If you think you've shot the canon of William Shakespeare's plays, you now need to see the long-lost first play.
It's now 38, not 37. We're going to have to change our canon in a decade passport in the gift shop.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less.